to the Drive Along Podcast, where in each episode I interview a guest uniquely involved in the car culture universe. With us today is Juliana Chiaviti, and she is the owner of The Motorsport Agency. This is a woman that is in charge in the motorsport world.
Hi, how are you, Ron?
I'm good. It's good to hear you. You know, we've known each other for a while. You've done some amazing things. Let's start with your background. I mean, going all the way back, you virtually grew up next to a racetrack, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, I grew up on a go-kart track. So my family owns 3S go-karts. It's just outside of Toronto, about 1 hour north. And my parents actually purchased the property in 1979. Well, just before 1979. That's when my first brother was actually born. I'm much younger than him. But they expanded the property. It was a very small go-kart track, almost like a peanut shape. And they expanded it into 10 acres now. We do storage, the racetrack, we do tuning, as it's called, which is essentially mechanics on go-karts. That also expanded to have several different import-export businesses across North America. You can say that I literally grew up on a go-kart track with racing already in my blood.
No surprise that you end up running the motorsport agency based on that. Now, with regards to the product carts and the engines that the family was importing, at one point you ended up in Las Vegas, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So my family ran Brell North America. My father essentially called it Brell USA. Brell today is actually referred to as Brell Art. It's the same company and go-kart that like people like Charles Leclerc drove until he now produces his own go-kart. Yeah, our family was always strong across the East Coast of North America, right from Canada all the way down to the US. We saw an opportunity open on the West Coast side. My father came to me and he said, hey, how would you like to turn it into something and an actual business? You know, for an Italian male to come to his daughter and say, run my business was like, that means a lot to you, because usually, you know, Italian women were supposed to stay in the kitchen and not really have an opinion about everything. And remember, I have two older brothers. So for him to select me, it meant a lot. I moved to Las Vegas for 2.5 years, saw some interesting things down there. But it gave me the opportunity to do my own importing, exporting of not just the Burrell go-karts, but also TM engines. And TM engines is essentially a purpose-built 125cc engine. It's a 6-speed manual. That's what I actually was racing myself and became Canadian champion. At one point, I was fourth in the world with that. It's essentially where I got to represent my country internationally, was through motorsport. Mm-hmm. So I did all the same stuff in Las Vegas. And like I said, I was there for 2.5 years and built up the business there. Also, I ran the race team with my brother. So my middle brother, Enzo, helped me on the racing team side because he's a well-respected top tuner in the industry. And I use the word tuner and not mechanic, because the tuner actually knows how to tune the engine and actually knows the engineering of the cart.
Anyone that understands racing or knows about racing is clear on tuner versus mechanic. I mean,
oh yeah,
a mechanic
big difference.
Can put together the nuts and bolts.
Yeah, I mean, I can change my own gears as well. That doesn't make me a tuner, right? These guys are heavily involved with the engines. There's so much going on with the engines. I could tune my own carburetor, but when it comes to actually building them and what's involved with the mechanics of it, that's more of a tuner side. And that's where you get the top engineer. So my brother helped me on the West Coast with that side while I focused on building the race team, getting the clients, the drivers, vetting everybody, and then essentially growing our dealer network.
Now, is this after you were racing internationally yourself and you call them manual, but I think anyone in the racing world would understand that as a shifter cart, correct?
Yes, it is a shifter car. And when I was operating Vegas, I was actually still racing. At that point, I was doing more race cars. I was sponsored by Ron Fellows in the Bridgestone Racing School here. I'd won a Formula 2000 scholarship. That's formula cars for anybody listening. If somebody's wondering what a formula car is, I say IndyCar, Formula One, or open wheel cars. the wheels are exposed, and NASCAR is more of the closed bale car. And that's also sprint cars
having,
as well.
Having raced formula car myself, I always say, well, the wheels are on the outside.
Yeah. Just for clarity. Yeah. I was still very much racing full time. So I was going back and forth between Vegas, Canada, in the US, whenever I had money to race our Mazda, as it was called back in that day. Now it's Formula Mazda, I believe they call it now. I was still heavily involved. And it was when I was living in Vegas when I got my last try at Indy Lights, the last step before IndyCar, which was known as CART. So when I lived in Vegas, I got selected for a shootout for that. And I also had to go to Texas, to Texas Motor Speedway for that.
Yeah. So you made it one step below the highest form of motorsport in North America.
Yes, sir. Yeah, yes, sir. I didn't have the $3 million check that they wanted back then. And today that same check would be about $6 or $7 million just to do the step below, right?
Well, that's hugely impressive. And obviously that has led, it's not even led at that point. You're just continuing, really. You're not in the driver's seat, but you're still heavily involved in those types of areas, only with other drivers now, aren't you?
Yeah. So that's where the motorsport agency came from. Actually, when I first started my first business, it was my automotive hookup. So eventually when I left my family's business, I didn't leave my family's business, but when I wanted to grow, when you're the daughter or a kid of your parent that owns a successful multi-million dollar company, no one's really not going to take you serious. So I said, okay, hey, dad, I did this. I was successful. I showed you I can do it. Let me spread my wings. So everybody always applauded me for being a really good teacher when it came to race cars or go-karts. I was just a really good instructor. I figured out that I learned the hard way and the way that you shouldn't learn, which is basically somebody, you know, kicking you in the butt literally every day to say, no, do this right. And I said, okay, I think I know how to teach people a little bit better. So I asked my father for permission to step away, and I started teaching a gentleman drivers how to drive their cars. This is anywhere from even an Ariel Adam, you know, an Ariel Adam made famous by Jay Leno and Jeremy Clarkson on Top Gear. And anyways, one of my first gigs was actually teaching some gentlemen how to drive those cars, and everybody was impressed, and they said, hey, do you want to do some sports cars? And I'm like, yeah, this is what I actually, you know, understand even more. And from there, it just started to evolve. 2 years later, I started my automotive hookup using my network to create a membership card to provide consumers with hookups from the same people that were giving me deals. I said, hey, you know, can I add you? So if you're one of my dealerships and you do a lot of performance tuning on Porsches or on Ferraris, I would go to these gentlemen and I said, you're willing to give me a hookup, a discount. Why couldn't you do it for my members? People that are consumers are willing to spend money, but want to be treated with loyalty, with this loyalty card, and want some preferred treatment. And everybody said, yeah. So from there, it was like this membership card that got you hookups at my different network of customers. And then I created track days.
You created sponsors, or you got sponsors that were willing to do a discount in a loyalty program.
Yeah. And, yeah, exactly.
For your customers that would tack into the loyalty program.
Exactly. Yeah, perfectly well said. And from there, I was approached by a group of gentlemen and said, can you run our track days and actually turn it into a viable business? And I said, well, sure, I can do this. It was a strong group of executive men who were just doing it for fun. And then 5 years later, I made it so successful that the gentleman who's the primary partner is also a race car driver. He's well into his 60s. He never has to worry about paying for his racing. This is a man that's 64, 65 now. He doesn't pay for any of his racing. He races at a pro level in SCCA and Trans Am racing across the US. He gets to crash race cars every summer and never have to worry about paying for them. I turned his track days into a viable business for him. From there, I've now expanded to Montreal as well. And in line with the Canadian Grand Prix, I host a track day because everybody's already in town. They're looking for something to do. They have the energy and they want to drive their fancy cars, right? So it's something that it's ongoing. And it really started with my automotive hookup. and then grew into the motorsport agency, because then I was working for Ferrari and through AIM Autosport at the time. Uh-huh. And I was doing their sponsorship. So everything's just an evolution.
Yes. And when you're inside an industry like you are, it is evolutionary, because yeah. you've referenced Ron Fellows, you referenced AIM. Let's go back to the Montreal connection. Are you actually getting access to the Formula One track?
No, you're not allowed to do that. So the Grand Prix track is on a park. The only group that has access to that track for a few hours on the Wednesday only before the track activities actually start on the Friday is Mercedes, because they're such a big sponsor within Formula One. Right. Instead, what I do is there's another track called iCar about 25 minutes out from the city, depending on how you drive, 25 to 35 minutes outside of the city. And that's where I host gentlemen drivers. So these are the guys with any car affiliated with motorsports I invite out to track their cars. And then some OEMs will be bringing guests, like Alfa Romeo or Mercedes will have their own cars there.
Right.
And guests can drive their cars. So I essentially give them a slot within that day. Everybody just laps. It's 25 minutes per group. I have two groups. One's a novice group. One's an intermediate / pro group who has more experience and can drive solo.
What an incredible addition to the experience of going to a Formula One race.
So because these gentlemen are already in town, we go straight from there and then we host like a VIP weekend for them, whether they're doing it at their manufacturer suite or if we actually have tickets to the president's suite as well, because we work well within the Grand Prix people. So we have access to those tickets.
I'd say what a phenomenal experience. You have a high performance fun car, sports car, get hooked up with you, and then you're on track. You're at the Grand Prix, president's level suite. What a fabulous, fabulous experience that would be.
Yeah. And there's tons of celebrities walking around all day long. And of course, when you're in the president's suite, there's always celebrities. That's a lot of fun, a lot of oohs and ahs. I'm the type of person, like, I don't want to stare. And at the same time, I'm so focused on like what's going on the track. I'm like, yeah, that's nice. What's going on? The great thing about the president's suite is when the cars are coming out of the pit, they're literally like 15 feet away from you. You're right on top of them, right?
You're right up pit exit in Montreal.
Yeah. It's incredible. And then also on pit exit, when they're just sitting there still warming up, they're right there. So it is a really nice experience. I'm truly blessed to keep doing this. And I found a way to take my professional racing career and turn it into a business where I'm still involved with motorsports and now automotive more and more too.
More and more automotive. Tell me about that.
On the automotive side, I just built up a name for myself for selling sponsorship or for creating ideas of how to sell sponsorship. As you know, sponsorship's not the same as it was 20, 30 years ago, where people are just willing to put a sticker on a car and say, you know, thank you so much. Now you have to be able to evolve with that. It's not so much a sticker. It's coming up with the hospitality. And then saying, hey, you know, for a little bit more money, if you want a little bit more of an investment, we can do this also trackside with consumers and actually put your product in a consumer's hand. So sure, you have the sticker. Now we can host you on the VIP side with your corporate executives within the group. But now you actually physically want to touch your customers. Let's do something like an engagement in a corner as well. So now you have physically people that are buying your product. Of course, doing this for a long time, my parents being involved with go-karts for so long and through auto shows, my parents were always heavily involved with the shows, buying all the go-kart spots for everybody and getting all the go-kart people, that eventually some of the shows just came to me and said, how can we be involved with you? Would you be interested in selling this concept or bringing in this retailer? And from there, it just evolved and manufacturers start to know your name and, you know, they ask you to do a test drive event and test out a car. And all of a sudden now I'm automotive woman trying out cars and reviewing cars. And like I said, my life in general is just an evolution. And it just seems as though it's like, I don't even try to do it. People just say, come review my car. And I'm like, yeah, I think I can do that. And from there, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, you have that mindset and it's like, okay, what else can we do with this? So that's how I keep doing more stuff in automotive. It's just, I provide my opinions on cars in a entertaining, honest way, I hope, but then also I keep it authentic, whereas I let viewers or consumers know that not everything is perfect. And I guess that resonates with OEMs, with dealers, and they say, hey, can you come review my stuff? Can you do this with me? And that's it.
I think you're trending very current because the manufacturers have started to realize that saying everything's perfect about this model of this car that we manufacture isn't talking to their audience anymore, that the audience wants more facts and probably getting that information in a different way, certainly not just in the newspaper ad or going to the dealership. I think you are filling a niche in that particular desire by the OEMs, by the manufacturers, to want a more, I guess, a validation of the product.
Yeah, well said. Also, people want authenticity. When I first started Automotive Woman, which is basically me reviewing cars, I was very much edited, had a lot of illustration to my videos. It almost came across fake. It wasn't me. Me, what I liked is exactly how I was as a driver instructor, is just I keep it authentic and just say, hey, this is this and this is this. I don't need any pretty graphics, music. You know, every once in a while I make fun of myself and I add in the graphics and the music, but I'm making fun of myself. I just really think that consumers want something that's just authentic. Give me the information. And then how can I get a better deal without begging for it and haggling? I have a strong opinion about selling cars these days, where I don't think we should have car sales men and women. They should literally be ambassadors for your company and have knowledge on the car. Walking into a dealership these days, that consumer probably has more information than you do about your own car.
That's been proven.
Yeah.
It's now a proven fact.
Exactly. So you're there just to be an ambassador, show them the car, allow them the privilege of touching that car before owning it, test driving it before owning it, visualizing themselves within it, and then deciding if they want to buy the car. And I think I'm part of that process where they're literally on Google or YouTube saying, okay, tell me about this car before I go into the dealership. And really they're educating themselves. And that's what I think is really important about reviews, is that you're telling the differences between packages. It's also important to state if you're in Canada or the US or a European model shown, because everybody gets confused about, well, if I walk in the dealership, am I going to have this? And I think that's what makes me a little bit different than the other YouTubers or journalists or anything like that, is like, I'm very clear saying this is this package, not this package. I'm a media representative. I'm always going to have the best of the best. This is not reality. That's how I try to keep it authentic. And it brings me back to my driver training ways, where people just want simplicity. Tell it to me simply and just keep it real with me.
Resonating with your audience, because yeah, there's too much hype. That's old school. And yeah. The modern way is, as you say, to tell it like it is. And you brought up a good point about the package and whether it's the European model or whatever. I mean, years ago, it was absolutely forbid to run on a German manufacturer ad with German plates on the car. Yeah. I mean, we had to, well, before Photoshop, we had to do all sorts of silly things to the front of that vehicle to not have a plate on it or to fake a plate on it. You know, I remember a game back when it was live, you would take a piece of black construction paper and then put a plate on top of that represented Canada or the United States. So it's interesting that part has evolved, and you look at a German manufacturer ad and 9 times out of 10, it's going to have a German plate on it, and it doesn't seem to bother people as much, because I think partially because of people like you, you're telling them the truth, and whatever plate is on it is more irrelevant than I think it used to be. Now you seem to have also taken a whole other trend of women and are catering to them in a certain way.
Yeah, believe it or not, if you just Google, for instance, if you're in Montreal and you Google girls car clubs, a variety of different things come up. And when I'm entering a new market, and for this example, it would be Montreal, that's exactly what I did, is how can I help these people evolve, not step on their toes, not try to take away their business, but I'm trying to work with you to help you elevate your brand. And at the same time, substitute some income for you. I really take the idea of how can we work together to evolve this, to grow this. And I just try to work with local people. And from there, it expands. So the women's thing is actually not new. I think people are just talking about it more. Now it's very much mainstream. It's a popular thing to talk about. There's several different hashtags and programs and things trending about them, where it's now, I think we're more in your face. So women's driving programs have always been there. Now we're just loud about it. We're not so nervous about talking about it. For example, Toronto Porsche dealership, actually there's several of them in Toronto that have done such a good job throughout so many years saying, hey, we're going to host our own track day with women to get you used to the idea of what are these track days? When we host your husband, what are they actually doing? Because it's not hard. Essentially, it's the idea of like, whatever you can do as a male, we can do too. And I think once you show people what they can expect and what they're doing, and it's not scary and this isn't hard, and it's like you walk away saying, oh my God, this is what my husband talks about, you know, every month when he goes out to his track day club. It's like, wow, this is easy. Why is he making this such a big deal? It's no longer a big deal anymore. Do I do female track days? I do the same women's track days as what everybody else has been doing for so long. I'm just more in your face. These other women and women groups are more in your face, and we're not nervous about talking about it anymore. So it's the same concept. It's just that we're women. And then when some women are actually comfortable now because they understand it and it's not hard or any of those things, you don't need to be intimidated. They're actually coming from their women's only track day and actually joining our male groups, because it's not males only. Males love women at track days. So we're basically growing them from your woman only day and come join us on the big track with the big boys.
I'm hearing that theme that goes all the way through from your motorsport training and teaching all the way through, which is, it's not hard. This is how you do it. This is how you do it successfully. This is how you do it safely. And I think you might be understating your involvement in that, because you've got that natural way of making it look, feel, sound easy. So I think some of that success is right on your shoulders with the way that you approach it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's funny because I have a gentleman driver who races Ferrari Challenge. And this is probably going back 15, 20 years when I was making the transition from professional racer to now I'm going to be an instructor. And I hadn't yet started my own company, but he asked me to take him out on his car. He'd heard rumblings from the other guy saying, you should go out with Juliana. So he approached me, and he's still a driver, so I won't name him. And he said, hey, do you mind teaching me? And I said, sure, I'll go out on the track. And the first thing I noticed, now this was years ago, and he's still a driver and he's evolved as well, but he gets in the car and he has what we call white knuckles. And you're so stiff on it that your knuckles go white. And I'm looking at him, he's like stressed and sweating. And I'm like, dude, we're doing like 120 miles an hour, man. This is like in my head. I didn't say it. Yeah. I was like, wow, this is really slow. And you're stressed. Like you're super stressed. So I said, do you mind if I drive your car? I asked for his permission. He said, I would love for you to drive my car. I said, cool. And this was at Mosport. So we go in, we make a switch. And I was like, hey, you cool over there? And he's like, yeah. He's kind of looking at me like, oh my God, you know, like my car's over $250,000. I have this woman driving the car. My friends told me she's good, but oh my God, she's driving my car. So you can see him having a mild heart attack. And I'm like, don't worry. You're okay. You're okay. No matter what you do, when you're a driver on a racetrack, you're going to look like you're doing things more exciting, and you're going to seem like you're more aggressive, you're faster, everything, than when you're a passenger. So as an instructor, I never go past 70, 75% of somebody's car capabilities, because at the end of the day, I'm not there to crash anybody's car. That wouldn't be good for business. So essentially, this guy was already only driving like 40% of the capabilities of his car. So no matter what I would do in that car, I would look godly, right? And I said, this is what you're going to do. I was like, just look at my hands. And I literally used my index finger and my thumb. And I said, it's called ballerina hand. Watch how I just steer around the track and let the track, especially at Mosport, when you get in the groove at Mosport, it literally just drives you around the track.
Yeah, it absolutely does.
Yeah. So I'm looking at him. I was like, see, like just your hands like this. Now watch, we're going to speed it up a little. My hands aren't going to change, but now you're changing the balance of the car and where we're braking. So every lap, I'm going to change my braking a little bit and I'm going to give you a visual. And then I gave him a visual about this is where you start to brake. This is where you're apexing. This is your visual. But I broke it down where it's like we would never work more than one corner at a time. And then eventually at the end of a 7-hour day, now he's putting all the corners together. Now years, right? 15, 20 years later, he still sees me and he still says, Juliana, ballerina hands. And he's still racing Ferrari Challenge in North America. It's just, it really is just simplify. Like people use big words to come across as smarter. And it's not about that. People just want to dumb down and be honest. That's it.
That's true. And effective that and ballerina hands.
Yeah.
We all know that style, whether I'm driving down the highway or on a racetrack, it's drilled into me too, but now I'll remember ballerina hands. And that term is perfect.
Especially in go-karts. Honestly, I learned it in go-karts because in karts, it's even go-karting, 125cc shifter kart go-karts is the hardest thing you will ever drive. It's when it is 40 degrees outside or hotter, you have inches of thick of rubber on the ground. You have 4 or 5 G's on your neck and you have people pounding on your bumper. This is the hardest racing you'll ever do for 30 minutes straight. And even with that, the last thing you want to do is fatigue your hands and then your torso, because that's how you're doing majority of your steering. And if you fatigue that by being stressed, it's just going to stress out all of your body. So I really took that training in karting and I applied it to all the different types of cars that I had the privilege of driving, which whether it's formula cars, sports cars, or just your daily driven supercar, it's always the same process.
Right. It is. And as I say, ballerina hands, all listeners now think ballerina hands should be
ballerina hands. Awesome. I should trademark that.
Yep. That is a TM word phrase. Juliana, nothing keeps you down, and I think our listeners will have established that by now. You've also now developed a product.
I have. So Fastlane Lifestyle by Automotive Woman Quick Detailer. So growing up on the go-kart track and then transitioning into cars, one of my tasks was always to keep my sponsors' decals looking great. So when I was working in sponsorship, still work in sponsorship, I was coming through and I saw all these drivers. I was trying to teach drivers how to find sponsorship and give them the tools to say, okay, this is how you find your own sponsors and own companies to do business with. You know, you're constantly out there begging people for money. And I said, I want to create my own product where nobody has to beg me. Nobody has to beg me for money. You become an ambassador. We work together. And when I flourish, you flourish. And I said, what product can I actually develop that resonates with me? And it was a quick detailer because of when I was on the go-kart track, I had to make sure my go-kart was clean. And then when you transition into cars, you know, the only thing you're really allowed to do is looking at your data. They don't like you touching the car so much. In my day anyways, they didn't like you touching the car a lot. So they said, you can be around the guys, you can watch the guys, but you can also clean your decals, which was important to me because I wanted to make sure that my sponsors always look good. So then years later, I said, I think the product that resonates with me is a quick detailer. And it was a process. It was months and months and months. It was laboratory tested so many times. I worked with, it's dual formulated. So it's good for both race cars and sports cars, essentially cars that aren't wrapped in full on decals and have the premium paint. I went back and forth with the Ferrari team in Ontario. And my friend also has a Subaru team as well. And then I was managing Sixth Gear, my gentleman's club. So I had access to all the performance cars. And I was going back and forth and testing this product. And I knew I finally had the right combination. I knew it. But nobody would say my Fastlane product was better. And I said, okay, guys, I'm going to go back one time. When you rent out time in a laboratory doing this stuff, it's not cheap.
No.
I said to them, I'm going to go back one time. I'm going to change something up. This time I went back to my lab. I did nothing. I took all the bottles, mine included. I took all the stickers off. I poured my bottle into one, my solution into one. I took the other solution that we narrowed it down saying, okay, this is the person that I'm competing with as a quick detailer. Let's put their product in that bottle. Let's wrap it as sample one, sample two, and let's go back. And I videotaped everything. And I said, okay, guys, here's another piece of body work and sticker and whatever. And I said, on this side is bottle one, on this side is bottle two. Now this is like, finally, I'm tapped out. I can't afford this lab anymore. Let's nail this. After we're done, I'll take everybody out for lunch. Cause I knew mine was better. I knew it. And nobody wanted to say it because I was a woman. So sure enough, they do it. I videotape everything. And I said, okay, let's go for lunch. Go for lunch. And they're like, Julianne, so what is the winning solution? I was like, mine. And I said, you guys didn't want to say that a woman's product was better. You're going to bankrupt me if I have to go to this lab one more time. And that's all I did, was to prove that mine was better than any other quick detailer out there. It was months and months of testing and then going back to the people that are testing it with. And then I always made sure everything was equal. So if one side of the bodywork had more rubber marks on it than the other one, I made sure that Fastlane always had the harder ones. Always. I don't like anything easy. Nothing has ever been easy for me. So I didn't want anything handed to me. I didn't want the easy way out. It was putting all those tests together. And it wasn't until the blind test that I said, this is my product. And then I labeled it, came up with a creative brand. And now I'm so proud this summer to have several different ambassadors coming on board to go back to my grassroots, which is go-karts, and sponsor actually the Most Port Kart Club. My parents actually still have a kart club, but they're in the middle of retirement. So I said, I don't really want to sponsor your guys' club if you're going to retire on me. But I still support some of their drivers, of course. It's been a process. I'm super proud of it. Now I want to put together a commercial to say, I will try my product against any boy's product and I will whoop their ass.
That is just so much you, Julianne.
Thank you.
The tenacity, the perfectionism, that is so you. And how did you finally break through? You basically did the Pepsi challenge.
Yeah. Pepsi, Coke, right? Yeah, well, that's where I got the idea, right? So it's never anything new. It's always just evolving. And Pepsi's way better, by the way.
Well, it's not so much taking that idea. That is a known and reliable marketing methodology.
Yeah.
That you've used and obviously proven it. So that product sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Fastlane detailing spray. I can't wait to try it myself.
Yeah, I'll send you a bottle. I'm super proud of it. It was hard. It was hard. People are like, oh, you know, you're just going to buy another product and put your label on it. No, I can show you my bank account that I didn't do it like that. This is Jules right there in a bottle, man.
Like everything else you've done, I'm not surprised at all.
Thank you.
Just to wrap up, what's in the future for you? Obviously, you've now got a product that's moving out. Your programs sound robust, to say the least. What's down the road for you?
I'm very happy to be launching this ambassadorship program. So I want to be able to attract more drivers across North America. I have currently Aaron Vogel Racing in California that I'm super proud of. And then I have a female owner here at the Auto Loft who's also an ambassador for the product too. So it's really growing that and getting it out in the streets. I love my track day before Montreal Grand Prix weekend. It's my favorite event of the year. So that means so much to me. So it's making sure that evolves every year and getting not just people from Toronto and Montreal area, but expand it from people coming in from New York, New Brunswick, and then Vancouver as well. And then, you know, eventually, besides just reviewing cars, I would love to see automotive woman evolve into automotive woman cars and have a category and a segment of actually selling high-end premium cars and doing more with importing and exporting of them. So I think big picture, that's where I see it evolving. Definitely on the motorsport side, if my business partner continues to speak to that network, which I'm confident he will, is to do more on the streets with motorsports and actually doing more at events and connecting with the drivers, because I think that resonates a lot with me as well. And that's it. I like the path that I'm on. Challenge, as you know, as a business owner, is just always finding the right talent who has your best interests at heart. And that's what I want. I want to make things easier for consumers when it comes to automotive. I want to make everything more entertaining for consumers when it comes to motorsports. And I want to create really cool products that I think they can use and benefit from.
Thank you. That's a lot. And yeah, that was that was clear.
And connect with me on social media, Automotive Woman.
Automotive Woman. That's right. I think you've got a very bright future.
Thank you. I hope so too.
Thank you for your time today, Juliana.
Thank you. It's so nice to speak to you again.